Hey everybody, it's Off The Ball, it's Gerry Gilroy here. Now before you dive into this podcast, let me tell you that William Hill have decided racing needed a bit of a shake-up. So they brought in the new Racing Bet Builder. It lets you combine multiple picks from the same race into one personalised bet. Basically more options, more control and fewer excuses if your mate's bet beats yours. Pick top three finishes, go head-to-head or call exact positions all in a single bet. It's racing from a new angle and it's live now with William Hill. Get the app, start building your bet today. It's over 18s only. Gamble responsibly. Visit gamblingcare.ie. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Off The Ball, GAA.
Well, I'm hooked, Tommy. I'm going to the final with you. I'm a Dingo man. I'm going to try and get myself a jersey or at least a hat, bobble hat. Dingo won me heart on Saturday.
Did they?
Oh, okay. Big time.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off The Ball Daily.
Good evening. This is Wednesday's Off The Ball. We're on your radios until 10 o'clock tonight. Michael McCarthy is back in the studio. Hello, Mick.
Hi, Owen. How are you?
Very well. And Cameron Hill is here. Hello, Cameron.
Owen, how are things?
All good. Let's kick things off with a pretty interesting report in The Independent this evening. Kian Tracy dropping the bombshell. Can we say a bombshell of its reports? Reportage bombshell from Kian Tracy.
An alleged bombshell.
7 minutes past five. Leinster lining up a shock return for Joey Carberry next season. So he's reporting that he is poised to leave Bordeaux this summer. And they understand that Ulster are also in the mix, but Leinster are believed to be increasingly confident of signing the out half. Is this as simple as if Leinster are confident they'll get it done, or will there be some sort of reservation on Joey Carberry's side?
I was going to say the other way around. I would say that if I think the IRFU would probably prefer him to move to Ulster, I think that the reason they might be confident is because Joey Carberry might want to go back to Leinster. You know, I mean, we all remember the, Joe Schmidt in a cafe begging him to go to Munster 2 years. I might have some of this story mixed up in my memory, but certainly two of them in a cafe and please, for the good of Irish rugby, you know, go down to Munster. Obviously, he loved it down there in the end and it wasn't a regret, but just give us 2 years, Joey, and we'll have you back here. Johnny, you'll be gone. You'll be the man. And it hasn't worked out that way. So I'd imagine there is a full circle element to it in his thinking of to go home. Like, I mean, let's face it, he did come up through Leinster. Mm. This isn't a kind of an out of the blue Leinster coming in stealing players. I'm happy to run with that narrative. I enjoy it. But in this case, this is a Leinster bred player. Going to say born and bred, but you know, almost. And I think it would be fair enough from his point of view if he wanted to go back.
Is there still any sense of distaste in Leinster for Joey Carberry leaving, or was it all for the greater good of Ireland?
He was kicked out by like Ireland, basically, in a way. You know, I think he was very reluctant to leave Leinster, and I can't imagine there's any ill will towards
him. There was that moment with Johnny Sexton, one of the Interpro derbies, where he like grabs somebody's scruff and like throws him to the ground, and it was like, oh, clearly he is persona non grata at Leinster.
That's just how Johnny Sexton deals.
I think it's more to do with Johnny.
That's how he expresses love.
Yeah,
what's wrong?
So it'll be fascinating. Like why it's happening this year is that he's then got a 12-month run into the World Cup. So joining Ulster would give you a better chance of making the World Cup because you've got fewer people to compete with.
Mm.
So I'm not necessarily sure it is all like, let's get straight back to Leinster.
The crowd he famously shushed last year when Bordeaux were playing Ulster.
Oh, yeah.
And was getting pelters from the Ravenhill faithful that day. So that'd be an interesting angle to all this. But I don't know. I think he we'll hear from him in a bit, but he's clearly, Ireland is very much on his radar in terms of making a return and getting back in the Ireland fold at some point. I remember speaking to him at a Champions Cup launch, not for this year, last year, in the Principality in Cardiff, and you just got a sense of him being at Bordeaux that he was almost, he'd shed a skin of some sort. Like, there was so much relief around him. There was like a catharsis about him now where suddenly I'm a lot happier playing rugby. Whereas the pressure, and he even spoke about, like, he used the term abuse that he was receiving online for what he was doing at Munster or not doing, as the case may be, and his performances maybe not being up to snuff. And just the pressure of what it is like to be a 10 in an Ireland system seemed to have really affected him in a negative way. So while maybe he's gone to Bordeaux and has a degree of maturity and has learned a lot from the likes of Jalibert and Louis Bielbiere and Damien Penaud, cooler players you will probably not meet because they are so comfortable and relaxed from what I've heard in the Bordeaux setup, that maybe it gives you a new perspective. But I don't know, would you be, from what he was describing in 24, I wouldn't be rushing back to that setup.
Well, can I ask a question? If Joe Carberry's going to play for Ireland again, are there any unclimbable mountains for him to pass currently in the Irish setup?
No.
And two of the three are at Leinster. So if he's going to pass them out at Ireland, he's going to pass them out at club level.
It's, you know, the same mountain,
so
yeah.
It's like come home and play rugby and don't get anywhere near international rugby, or come home and try and play for Ireland again and, you know, you're passing out Harry Byrne and Sam Prendergast. I think on current form, it's not to say that he will. I would say the likelihood is that he won't.
Yeah, of course.
But he has a chance. We don't have a Johnny Sexton or a Ronan O'Gara to go and surpass at the moment. There's nobody established.
As long as he keeps his fitness. That's always been the issue with Joey Carberry. It's been the biggest killer for him from 2019 World Cup prior to that and certainly after that. That's been the biggest killer for him, and it put paid to his career in Ireland, essentially. We do kind of need to remind ourselves of like how big this story was on two different fronts. Like, the first of all is Joey Carberry's emergence onto the scene at Leinster when Graham Henry is brought in by Leo Cullen in 2016. And the story goes that he points out Joey Carberry and he's like, you got to build your team around that fly half. And then kind of the story builds from there that Leinster are reportedly furious with him leaving at the time. Like, maybe not his teammates, but even just reading back through some of the reporting around it this evening, kind of the sense was that a team would generally release a statement saying, Joey Carberry's left the province, we wish him well, good luck in his new environment, and they didn't do that. I think they were particularly annoyed with the IRFU's involvement as opposed to Munster or Carberry himself, I should say. That it was completely to do with the IRFU. Now, we'll speak to James Collin later on, and he would be of the opinion that like this is how the IRFU should operate. If we actually want to achieve what we can achieve as a country, then we do need to be pooling resources a little bit better. But then I think it was Jer maybe in this chair many years ago saying that the rivalry is dead. If you've got Joey Carberry leaving Leinster to go to Munster, then the rivalry is clearly dead. So you can't have it both ways. You can't have a vibrant, good hatred between Munster and Leinster and then also hope for players to be transferred between the two of them. But I've kind of gone down a Munster versus Leinster rabbit hole absolutely is not.
Like, if he goes to Ulster, is so exciting. Wouldn't you see what Richie Murphy and Mark Sexton
Well, that's the best
produce?
Thing for Ireland, isn't it?
Oh, it'd be so great. Like, and you definitely feel that when you, like, watching Ulster against Munster last week, and the way they've mastered what is in rugby at the moment with the kicking, the emphasis on kicking, and just how well that seems to be working from an Ulster perspective. If you had, like, a pivotal player like a Joey Carberry in the middle of that where you could build the attack around, they'd be unstoppable. I think Ulster would be the team to watch from an aesthetic point of view, certainly in Irish rugby, and possibly, like I said it on Off the Ball Saturday, that I have a feeling that if there's not too many Ulster players called up to the Ireland squad for the Six Nations, they might have a chance at the URC title this year. I just have a feeling about them. But if you had next year, if you're trying to build something as Richie Murphy at Ulster and create this driving force in Irish rugby, I think Joey Carberry would be a great signing.
Yeah, it'd be very exciting. It'd be very exciting. Now, I know Leinster would want to bolster their options further at number 10, and they've obviously lost Kieran Frawley. There's a text in here from a US number, which we'll get to hear, Mick. And I'm going to put this on you. I'm not sure if you gave it a mention, but the fact that the Ravens coach has been sacked is a huge story here in Baltimore. I'm really not a fan, but you can't ignore it. He was a huge influence and a really great guy that everyone loved. Is that still Harbaugh?
John Harbaugh.
John
Harbaugh
was still there until now.
The other Harbaugh brother who beat his brother in his only Super Bowl in 2013, who was the coach of the 49ers at the time. It's a massive story. John Harbaugh was like he was the second longest reigning coach in the NFL, the longest being Mike Tomlin of the Steelers, who their division rivals against, and missed the field goal in the last second on Sunday to get knocked out to put the Steelers through. The Steelers won. So it might have been a whoever loses gets fired game, and the longest tenure would be over. But yeah, it's a massive loss. I think John Harbaugh will be fine. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him as the head coach of the New York Giants next year.
Okay. There you go. Thank you for responding on the fly to that. Thank you for getting in touch with the United States.
Taking my top story there, lads. But anyway,
our number is +353 87 4918 180. See, it rolls off the tongue without the international code at the start of it.
Hey everybody, it's Off The Ball, it's Ger Gilroy. Now, before you dive into this podcast, there are plenty of ways to build an ACCA. Some people stick with the favourites, some are convinced they've cracked it, others less sure once the final result goes sideways. However you do it, William Hill lets you boost your football ACCA, giving you more back when it comes good. Just build the ACCA you want with four or more legs and William Hill will boost your winnings depending on the number of selections. The boost is applied automatically and shown right there in your bet slip, so you know exactly what you're getting. Whether it's a quiet midweek fixture or a big weekend of football, it's a simple way to get more out of every ACCA you place. Download the app or visit William Hill to get started today. It's over 18s only. Gamble responsibly. Visit gamblingcare.ie. Now, back to the podcast.
Kick us off here, Cameron. A massive night of Premier League action. Where do you want to start?
Well, we'll start with Manchester United because they're reportedly set to hold further talks with former players Michael Carrick and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in their search for an interim management team. It's understood they want a short-term replacement for Ruben Amorim, who was, of course, sacked on Monday. But there could be a role for both in the new setup, according to multiple outlets. Ex-midfielder Darren Fletcher will lead the team in tonight's Premier League match at Burnley. He was pretty tight-lipped on whether he wants the job full-time.
I'm focusing on Burnley. I think that discussion's for after the game, as I said. There's been that much going on. It's all happened so quickly. All my concentration and efforts and thoughts are gone into Burnley. And I know that sounds like a generic answer, but it is what it is.
That's a 8:15 kickoff at Turf Moor tonight.
One thing Manchester United haven't tried since 2013, they've tried lots of things. Well, they haven't tried it since the first time. The first thing they tried was a Scottish manager. So they did it initially and it was a disaster. But I feel like that, you know, just because that wasn't the right one doesn't mean it wasn't the right idea. Stick to a man talking about the team, picking the team and what game he's concentrating on in a Scottish accent. Now, admittedly, a less kind of, you know, 1950s, you know, Glasgow streets accent. But at the same time, you know, possibly slightly more refined, slightly more rugby, you would almost say.
Yeah, so Andrew Carter for United is what you want.
Well, I don't know. I just think that, look, you know, stick with what works. I know it didn't work with Moisey, but that's not to say throw it out altogether as a strategy. I mean, everything else hasn't worked either.
Did you see he asked for Sir Alex's blessing before taking the job?
I did, yeah. I heard about that, yeah. Before he rang Rio.
How does that work? Yeah, before ringing Rio.
Like proposing. Sir Alex is the dad.
What's Ferguson supposed to say? I go for a kid, you know.
You're a great lad. I don't know.
Is it Darwin?
It's like, you know, is this part of the problem? Like we were talking about.
Michael Carrick rang me there and said he's going to get the United job. I get my blessing. Oh wait, it's the other one.
We were talking about this last night with Owen, like, and the amount of people that still have a say in the club that shouldn't. Like, I'd argue the influence of Jim Ratcliffe or how much he opines on the footballing nature of the club is way too much. Should he have more of a say than somebody like David Gill? Should he have more of a say than somebody like Alex Ferguson?
The story that he tried to make Mbeumo a wing back. And is like, why is he got any say on that whatsoever? But yeah, I completely agree. Like that, there's I think it's the pundit culture and the Manchester United way, and you know, Man United DNA and everything like that. It's probably time to leave it all behind, really, isn't it? Like, you know, I was thinking about about Liverpool losing their way in, you know, the 90s. And it was very much like keep the boot room culture and all of this. And it's like, well, the time has passed. Like, you know, you need to move on and become a different club to regain the glory and the next generation of it. And it took Liverpool a long time to do that. But it hasn't taken them as long as it's taken Manchester United. If you know what I mean, like, because they, like, regardless of whether it took them a long time to find their way in terms of winning league titles and all, they'd left all of the 80s stuff behind 13 years in, which is what we're in. We're 13 years after Ferguson now. And you would argue United have never been in a worse place in that time.
The Manchester United DNA of playing three at the back might be out the window. It looks like it could be four at the back. Now, we don't know this for sure until the kickoff, but it's at Lammens in goal. It's Shaw, Martinez, Heaven, and Dallo as a back four. Now, Dorgu is in the team, so you're assuming that he's playing on the right wing, Cunha on the left wing, Ugarte and Casemiro midfield, Benjamin Sheshko up front, and also starting tonight for Manchester United is Bruno Fernandes. So Ugarte and Casemiro are both playing, and Bruno Fernandes. Yeah. So Fernandes is going to have his most advanced role in the team all season long. You'd suspect he's going to be in the number 10 position tonight.
There's no hope in hell they're playing three at the back, by the way. That would be one of the weirdest decisions that Fletcher involved.
Yeah, it's like
we had this, like, we blew up. We literally, our manager blew up and got sacked out of nowhere because of an argument about why he went back to three at the back. And my first decision is, you know what? The players know what they know.
Yeah. I'm looking at their bench tonight.
It's the one Fletcher.
Oh, there is. There is. Okay, so Jack. Jack's his favourite son. Yep. We've got confirmation of that. He's made the bench tonight. They're up against Burnley, obviously. There's no Irish interest in that team after the injury of Josh Cullen. So, yeah, we'll keep you up to speed on that. We'll bring the team news very shortly as well at the rest of the games. Cameron, what have you got next?
Well, we'll just go through the rest of the games this evening, Owen, because at the same time, 8:15, Leeds United on a 7-game unbeaten run ahead of their trip to Newcastle. Then you have 6 matches kicking off in the next few minutes at 7:30. In fact, Manchester City and Aston Villa can both move to within 3 points of leaders Arsenal. City face Brighton without Ruben Diaz, John Stones or Josko Vardy all to call upon tonight. But manager Pep Guardiola stresses you don't need a huge squad to win the Premier League title.
It doesn't matter. Sometimes I've seen in moments that I win Premier Leagues and titles in other countries and here with few players. But the spirit always was there. And this year we can never lose.
Villa go to Crystal Palace. Keith Andrews' Brentford can move closer to the Champions League spots if they beat high-flying Sunderland tonight. They're 7th after a 5-game unbeaten run, the Bees. But Andrews insists they won't get carried away.
Regardless of where we are, really, I've focused on the next game. I don't tend to look too further away from that. I think it's disrespectful to the league and what is a very, very demanding league. I think the league will tell you that. The points between 7th and 14th, very, very little. 3 points, I believe. Yeah, we just focus on the next one, which will be a difficult game.
Antoine Semenyo is in the starting side for what's likely to be the final time for Bournemouth when they host Tottenham. He is undergoing a medical at Manchester City tomorrow. Wolves head to Everton and Chelsea make the short jaunt to Fulham.
You were looking at this Crystal Palace fixture for Aston Villa tonight, Mick, quaking in your boots.
Yeah, so Cameron said, like, you know, it's like they could go within 3 points and it's like they, you know, that they go to Crystal Palace, let's move on, like as if it's the most normal fixture in the world. This is like going to, you know, the 5 European Cups in a row winning Real Madrid team, like for Aston Villa tonight. This is an impossible mountain to climb. Can I just go through Villa's results under Unai Emery against Crystal Palace? They won the first 2 games in March and September 2023, both at Villa Park. At Selhurst Park, not as good. Then last day of the season when Villa got to the Champions League final in May 2024, Crystal Palace 5, Aston Villa 0.
Oh yeah.
That led to what we had last season, which was 4 fixtures between the teams. Started in the League Cup, where Aston Villa lost to Crystal Palace at Villa Park 2-1, followed by a 2-2 draw in the Premier League. Villa were lucky to get a draw there. That was at Villa Park. Followed by a 4-1 hammering by Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park in the league. Followed by an FA Cup semi-final at Wembley, 3-0 to Palace. And followed by, at Villa Park earlier this season, the nadir of Villa's starting point, a 3-0 defeat. So that is, if you're counting at home, that's 5 defeats in the last 6 games for Villa against Palace. Ben looked this up, actually. Emery, when he was with Arsenal, never had a win against Palace either. 2 draws and a defeat in his 3 games against Palace, which is interesting. So there's something, just something about this team. I thought it was a Glasner versus Emery thing, and I think it might be, but there's definitely something just seriously wrong there. But the good news is, Ismail Assar, when he plays for Palace, is a good player. Sometimes okay, sometimes good. When he plays against Villa, he is he's the greatest player that I've ever seen. Twice a season, 4 times last season. He's at AFCON. So
Ismail Saradona, as they call him against Aston Villa.
Absolutely. But actually, one of the more fascinating things is 2025, how many games did Aston Villa lose at Villa Park?
100% of them to Crystal Palace, I would assume.
1 game at Villa Park. That was the 3-0 game. That was in all of 2025. The last winners at Villa Park before that,
Crystal Palace
in the League Cup in October the year before.
Well, it doesn't matter.
It's at Selhurst Park tonight, where we've even worse records. So.
It's not going to be a problem next season. It'll be a problem for Manchester United next season when Unai Emery is Manchester United manager.
Stop it now. Don't be bold.
Rio Ferdinand told me he'd take the job.
Did he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who else did Rio Ferdinand say that he'd...
Mikel Arteta.
Yeah.
And then he's like, guys, I can't believe you thought I was being serious.
Did he? It sounded like he was arguing it when I heard the audio.
But you don't suspect Emery would pick up the phone? It's one of those. Would he get Sir Alex's blessing?
And then Rio's?
I wouldn't say it's a guarantee he doesn't. I mean, you can't be naive about this. And Villa fans are getting a bit very tick about it because it's like, you know, why would he leave for it? You know, you have to be honest and say what Manchester United are. The issue is the manager just got sacked because of interference and because he blew up and got angry because they wouldn't let him be the manager and wouldn't let him be the most important person at the club. Emery has built everything around Aston Villa of him being, he is technically the head coach, but the football director's answer to him, he is top of the tree. And I just can't believe that he would give up that kind of control for a basket case of a club. Now, it's a basket case of a club that you could turn around and be a hero and you could also get a lot of money to do it with, which would be tempting. I completely understand that. But I feel like, I just think he's in a place with Villa where it's a project and he's looking at it. Guillaume Balague obviously spent a lot of time with him over the years and wrote that book, and he's kind of in the adamant brigade when he says that if you think that Villa, he's just going to walk away from Villa, then you really don't know what he's doing there, you know. So I would take that a little bit to heart. But I wouldn't say I'm not a little bit worried about it. I'd like to see them lean towards Oliver Glasner and put the arm around and say, you know, we've only got one man in mind. You know, I wouldn't mind this story being over, I have to say.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. Just one other thing from tonight's fixtures, just on the Manchester City story at the moment, because it does feel that, you know, their fans at the moment are definitely putting forward this idea that they've got a complete crisis of available bodies. That's certainly the case in their defence at the moment. They've got Max Alain starting at left centre back alongside Kusanov. Obviously, they lost Yasko Gvardiol over the course of the weekend to that broken leg. Ruben Diaz, with his hamstring strain, is out. John Stones continues to be injured. You've got Reina Nouri still at AFCON as well at the moment. Interestingly, he has now dropped Ryan Cherki, Rodri and Nico O'Reilly to the bench, so he has made wholesale changes other than that. But it's a threadbare defence is what Manchester City are operating with at the moment. They could add Guay to the squad potentially this week, but this is a matter of winning the title or not, or challenging all the way till May or not, if their injury crisis in defence continues.
You look at a game like tonight and you almost struggle to see them having one of those comfortable Man City nights that we would have become so accustomed to with a team like that, a threadbare team like that. And it's like, they could win.
The attack is still amazing,
but they also might not. And it's like, if they're not winning games like this, if they're not taking care of business and doing so comfortably, you would say, to almost like get to the weekend, I know it's FA Cup, but you know, to get to the next game constantly with the amount of fixtures that they have, I don't think City are consistent enough. I really don't. I've been saying it for months and months and months, but yeah, you look at the state of the squad at the moment and it looks like it's going to back me up.
Hey everybody, it's Off The Ball's Gerry Gilroy here. Now, before you dive into this podcast, let me tell you that William Hill have decided racing needed a bit of a shake-up. So they brought in the new Racing Bet Builder. It lets you combine multiple picks from the same race into one personalised bet. Basically, more options, more control and fewer excuses if your mate's bet beats yours. Pick top three finishes, go head-to-head or call exact positions all in a single bet. It's racing from a new angle and it's live now with William Hill. Get the app, start building your bet today. It's over 18s only. Gamble responsibly. Visit gamblingcare.ie. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Ray in Mullingar has been in touch to say Joey Carberry will have the unique tax bonus Irish players who finish their career in the Republic have. So I would say a 25% career tax refund might play a part in an Ulster versus Leinster tie. I hadn't considered your jurisdiction. Could he be a resident?
There used to be a lot more talk about that than there has been. I suppose it's because not as many kind of like high profile players are playing abroad. But you would think it would come into it.
You have a clip for us actually on Joey Carberry, Cameron. You've been going through the archives.
The archives, yeah. All the way back to October when he joined Darren Cullum on Off The Ball Breakfast Stone. So as we mentioned, Leinster Ulster reportedly in the hunt for Joey Carberry, whose contract with Bordeaux expires this summer. And he told Darren Cullum he would jump at any opportunity to sign for a province if it meant he'd be back in the Ireland picture.
If it meant going back and playing for Ireland, I'd jump at it. So it's just those conversations are yet to be had. So if that is the case, then I'll definitely hugely consider it. A big thing with me going to France when I did was I felt that I just needed a break. I obviously hadn't been picked for Ireland for maybe a year, year and a half. And I needed a fresh start, a fresh day. And now for me, my main ambition and goal has always been to play for Ireland. So if that comes knocking again, then I'll 100% jump in it. But I think going to France was good for me because it cleared my head a little bit. It just refocused me a little bit, made me love the game a little bit more again. So putting all that together, I think, has helped my rugby.
Staying on the rugby front, France are set to boot out Maxime Loucou for their opening Six Nations clash with Ireland in a month's time. Bordeaux head coach Yannick Brew confirmed today that the scrum half has suffered a knee injury and could be out for 4 to 6 weeks. Loucou will certainly miss the upcoming Champions Cup pool games for the holders, which includes a rematch with last year's runners-up Northampton Saints at Stade Chaban Delmas this weekend. It leaves Brew with an injury crisis at scrum half at Bordeaux. While Loucou is now in a race to be fit for the first game in their Six Nations title defence against Ireland in Paris on February 5th, France head coach Fabien Galthié could also be without loose head prop Jean-Baptiste Gros for that game at the Stade de France. He's also recovering from injury.
Loucou's his place in the importance stakes is certainly less than it was last year, right? They have a better guy for number 9.
I've heard that. Yeah, yeah. This guy at Toulouse, he's coming through. I think he might be better than Loucou, but we'll have to wait and see.
I actually haven't seen much of Dupont since he's come back from injury.
Absolute, like, it's one of
them. It up, yeah.
Was injury better for him than seven? This is kind of the talk now.
Wow, okay.
He is, you know, he's actually come back even stronger. I think they destroyed La Rochelle a couple of weeks ago in the top 14, and he was central to that. So, yeah, I'd be quaking in my boots. I don't think the Loucou news is going to give Andy Farrell much peace at all if Dupont is also tearing up trees right now.
We have just seen on Sky Sports over the past couple of minutes Gary Neville saying that he wouldn't be in support of the return of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So that would be an interesting wrinkle on their relationship. We'll try and bring that audio as soon as we can.
They got him in on Stick to Football like 4 or 5 weeks ago.
That was best.
Best mates, all the stuff behind them.
That's a pull quote from the interview that I've seen online. So hopefully we'll be able to get that audio and give you full context on that in the next few minutes. Where do you want to go next, Cameron?
Well, John Rahm has revealed that Team Europe used some of the taunts hurled at them by American fans as fuel for their successful Ryder Cup defence last September. So, of course, just to refresh everyone's memories, the touring players received scores of verbal abuse from supporters during the event at Bethpage back. A beer was thrown at Rory McIlroy's wife from the stands in one of the more infamous incidents. But Rahm saw the funny side of some of the insults directed at his playing group. He recalled on Golf.com's Subpar podcast this week.
With my group, so with me and Terrell and Sepp, right, all three of us rather overweight, and two of us being in Liv, all I heard was traitor, terrorist, fat, Ozempic, a lot. I remember I missed left on 5 one day. If you have to wait and you're in the grand, like on the gallery, it is brutal. I mean, they're as close as we are, and I hear it all. And I had this guy in my ear calling me a traitor, terrorist, this and that. And first thing I want to say is, I'm like, dude, a traitor to who? I'm not from this country. But then you hear people from the crowd where, after they said it enough times, there was like a 5-second pause, and there was a woman next to the guy that was railing me that just goes, well, for that amount of money, I would do it too, right? Which it's just on the grand scheme of things of how things are going. And then they started arguing between
just having
each other.
A conversation.
They started arguing with themselves. And this time I'm like, okay. And that I actually found it quite funny. Now, anything that they said is probably the first time they gave it was Tyrell a hard time because he decided to go to the first dinner practice round without a hat. So it was somebody from like way on the top. Yeah. Hey, Terrell, when's the turkey appointment? So the first time I heard that, we all started dying laughing. It was images of that. And the first time they told me about Ozempic, it was pretty funny as well.
Some of this Ryder Cup stuff is objectively disgusting. That is objectively hilarious.
Yeah. If it was that kind of stuff constantly, like slagging them about like hair transplants and stuff like that, like, you know, I don't think there would have been any issue.
No.
Do you remember there was a thing on the practice round that somebody said something to Rory and Shane, and they thought it was the funniest thing they'd ever heard? And I can't remember off the top of my head what it was, but that was what the feeling was. Oh, it's going to be a feisty kind of week because lads are going to try to be funny, as opposed to lads are going to be like, you know, aping, you know, cosplaying war and just being scumbags, basically, which is what kind of it developed as on the Friday and Saturday especially.
Well, I actually think when they're not trying to be funny, I think in some of those Ram comments they were trying to be insulting, but they ended up being like accidentally hilarious. Yeah. I think when the American crowds are trying to be funny, that's just cringe, but it's, you know, not over the line either. That's all fair. Here, let's bring you some of this Gary Neville audio. So he's speaking, I presume he's at the Manchester United versus Burnley game tonight. So that's where Gary Neville tends to be deployed in his duties for Sky Sports, is at the Manchester United game. So here he is talking about the succession plan.
So in the interim, if it's not Darren Fletcher, would you support a return for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
I would not. I mean, I think that there is an element of... we saw this at Liverpool, didn't we, for like 25, 30 years when they were going through that period where they weren't winning, and they sort of, you almost go through cycles whereby, and United have done this for 12 years now, they put Ryan in charge 10 years ago, then Ole came in charge, and you go back to the old boys, and then you go for a new one, then you go for a more, and it's almost like a cycle, it's almost like a movie that we've all seen before. And Groundhog Day. So, look, what I do think is that Ollie is someone that absolutely loves the club. He knows the job. He's been in the job. The other names that are being mentioned, obviously Michael Carrick and Ruud van Nistelrooy, these are really fantastic people. I played with those guys for a lot of years. They love the club intensely. They get the club. But still, they're still going to come under a lot of pressure in this next 4 or 5 months if results don't go their way. So, look, I think they have to be ready for that. Either whoever's going to get it out of those three that are being mentioned, I wish them all the best because it's a tough role.
Yeah, okay, we might come back to this on the football show after 9 o'clock. So I'm keen, Cameron, to just get to a few of your other football stories tonight. What have you got for us?
Well, here at home, Owen Shamrock Rovers are reportedly set to add Jake Mulroney to their squad for the new Premier Division season. Multiple outlets are reporting that Mulroney would move to Tala in a swap deal between them and St. Patrick's Athletic, with Darren Nugent heading to Richmond Park as part of that deal. Meanwhile, Galway United have announced the re-signing of Francie Lombotto from NIFL side Glenavon, a former Galway Academy player. He made 73 appearances for the Tribesmen between 2020 and 2024 before then moving to Sligo Rovers. Former England and Newcastle manager Kevin Keegan has been diagnosed with cancer. His family say he'll now undergo treatment with them, thanking medics for their intervention and ongoing care. And former Tottenham and England striker Martin Chivers has died at the age of 80. He played more than 400 games for Spurs and is one of their greatest ever goal scorers. He also won 24 caps for his country.
Okay, Cameron Hill, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Mick, you're going to rejoin us for the football show a little bit later on.
Off the Ball Daily.